pitchers and catchers report to spring training in less than 2 weeks. And oh boy, we got to talk some pitching. Good evening, everyone. It is Friday, February 7th, and welcome to episode 232 of Buds and Blue Jays. It's your place for all things related to the Toronto Blue Jays. I'm Jesse Burrell, and today I am not joined by my usual co-host, Jesse Tricio. As you can see, we are bringing back old friend. He's wearing the Blue Jays t-shirt in the middle of February. Very fitting for this today. It's David Fulton. Longtime fans know you. Dave, we're very glad to have you back. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me on again. Always glad to come back as hopefully everyone's favorite substitute teacher. So
that's right. And no taking it easy today. You're not wheeling in that little video screen to come on and make things easy. Dave, you know you've known your stuff. We know you've been following this team all throughout the course of the offseason. So I expect nothing but A-plus performance from you here today.
I'll do my best to bring my A-game, as I always do.
All right, excellent. Well, today on the show, we are going to continue our season preview segment here, and we are going to start by diving deep on the starting pitching of the Toronto Blue Jays. Is Kevin Gausman going to get those strikeouts back again? Can Chris Bassitt find his command that plagued him a little bit? And what can we really expect from Max Scherzer coming off of injuries or Bowden Francis? Like, who is the real Bowden Francis? We are going to answer all of that in this episode. But first, Dave, because you haven't been on the show in a while, I wanted to hit you with a couple just overall Blue Jays-related questions that we would have thought on throughout the course of the offseason to kind of see where your thoughts are. As the audience knows, Jesse and my thoughts quite well, we want to see where your head is at. And Dave, the first one is a plain, simple question that all Blue Jays fans are asking right now is, will we get a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. extension before spring training starts?
That's the $200 million question, isn't it? I'd like to believe yes. I don't know if it's been so quiet, right? There's not really been anything that's leaked out that seems to suggest it's going in either direction. So I'd like to believe no news is good news, and that they're having productive talks behind the scenes, and they're trying to keep everything under wraps so that, you know, it doesn't leak out and, you know, one side or the other gets upset with it. But yeah, I'm hopeful. I really am. If they don't, that's going to be really tough. That's to go into the season with that hanging over the whole thing. Like, if they're smart, they'll get this done ASAP so that elephant's out of the room.
Yeah, we know the one thing, though, with the Blue Jays front office is that they aren't necessarily always the smartest when it comes to things like this. And the last thing I think you want for this Toronto Blue Jays team, and I had this thought today, is like, when we go into New York to play the Yankees, or we go into Fenway to play the Red Sox, and Vlad's not under contract long term, you already know the type of comments he's going to get, the questions he's going to get. Remember last year when Bo Bichette was in San Francisco and he met with the San Francisco media and started talking about how San Francisco seems like a place they want to win. It's going to be that, but all year. And that is the last type of thing these Blue Jays need going into what is a very crucial season for this franchise. So I'm with you, Dave. I really do hope we get the extension, as many Blue Jays fans do. I'm not feeling optimistic right now. I think the Blue Jays might go into that like Aaron Judge route with the Yankees, where they let him play out on his contract year, have him mash 50 some home runs, I guess, and then play it into the offseason. It's a risky move, but I do not think it's going to come together, unfortunately, before the start of spring training.
Yeah, and I don't really understand doing it in that direction either. Like the Judge thing with the Yankees, I sort of understand, because Hal Steinbrenner is not George Steinbrenner. Like that's very clear that there is, like, George would just spend whatever money to get the best team. And it's clear that Hal's direction is different from that, where there is some consideration for, we need to kind of keep the spending at least a little bit.
They're crying poor.
And, but this iteration of Blue Jays management has made it exceptionally clear that they are absolutely willing to open the wallet over and above, like, the number of free agents over the last 2 or 3 years, that they've been willing to pay over and above what the offer was elsewhere. And it hasn't been enough. That's one thing, but at least it demonstrates that you're willing to pay that money. So if you're already willing to open the wallets up and you're convinced that this guy is the guy, is the franchise guy, which I think a lot of people would agree is the case, why aren't you just paying him? Mm-hmm. Why are we trying to do this thing where you're playing chicken, essentially, right? Because if he has another down year, then yeah, you can nickel and dime him a little bit, but at the end of the day, you're still gonna have to pay him a decent chunk because you know what he can do. And if right. he goes absolutely off a la Judge, you're gonna end up paying him like $100 million more than you could have paid him right now, right? Not that I'm trying to suggest that Vlad shouldn't get whatever money he ends up getting, but at the end of the day, if you're willing to pay, then pay right now. There's no sense in letting this fester. You know what I mean? There's no reason to nickel and dime him. And if you pay him now and he goes off anyway, you've saved yourself some money down the road.
I mean, the best time to give him an extension was 3 years ago. The second best time is right now. And I'm with you. Unless the only reason they haven't done it is because they have no plans on doing it. And then if that's the case, only getting a comp draft pick for him at the end of the season is going to be a very, very tough look for this franchise. We will see how that plays out. It's going to be an ongoing story. We will talk a lot more about it, I'm sure. But Dave, some other questions I have for you here. The offseason, it's come and gone. It went from high highs to low lows and everything in between. So two questions, I suppose. One, give me a grade for how you think the offseason has gone so far, with maybe some minor moves still to be made. And what was your favorite move the Blue Jays made this offseason?
It's tough for me to say that this is any better than like a C, maybe. Okay. Like, don't get me wrong. I mean, the Max Scherzer has the chance to be a very good value add. If you're getting the guy from a couple of years ago, you know, there's some injury concern there. But, you know, Toronto's medical staff is really good.
They do have a history of keeping starting pitchers healthy.
I was going to say it's aside from some rough luck. In a couple of instances, by and large, the staff has been pretty healthy for the last couple of years, all things considered. So you kind of hope that there's some, you know, magic to be worked there. And Santander, I mean, I'm neither here or there on that. I like him as a player. I just, you know, the age that he's at and the trajectory that tends to go, you know, the first couple of years are probably going to be productive and the last few are probably not. So you know what you're getting with him. But I mean, apart from that, I'm a little bummed about some of the guys that went out the door. And yeah,
you're a Horowitz guy, weren't you?
I was a big Horowitz guy.
Yeah.
There's a few guys that went out the door this year that I was really high on, either because we'd seen them, you know, do it at the big league level, or they were looking like they were going to be pieces in the future. And now, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if you see them as everyday players in the future for other teams. But I mean, it remains to be seen. If this is the sort of thing where they're like, you know, we're hoping that it's going to be internal improvement on the roster, I think the potential's there. I really like Nathan Lucas. I really like Will Wagner. I thought Wagner was excellent down the stretch for them after we got him from the Astros last year. So if you get some big up and coming performances out of that, and you get, you know, Vlad to kind of go back to Vlad form, you know, the second half of last year, actually really three quarters of the year for the most part. And you get Ernie doing Ernie things. I think it has a chance to be good. It's tough to watch all the free agents that we either definitely had a package together for, or allegedly had a package together for, and all of them passed on it for the most part. It's tough to watch. I mean, I'm sure every fan of any fan base, you know, any team would feel that way if you see your team batting 0 for 10, you know, or 0 for 15 on free agents up to a certain point. And then you get a few. We got a few. I'm not going to say that we didn't get anybody, but I just don't know if they're enough to move the needle for me. So, yeah, it's like a C maybe.
Okay. I will go a little bit higher, I think, but maybe that's just because the spring optimism is on my way. I still think this Blue Jays team has holes and still has more work that should be done. I don't know if they're absolutely going to go that route. And there are a lot of things that need to go right for this Toronto Blue Jays team in order for us to be in the playoff position this year. But they've got a foundation in place now, and at least you can see a path with the places they have made, with the pieces they have put together to get this Toronto Blue Jays team to be a competitive team. So that I will give them credit for, I suppose. Dave, one quick question. Pete Alonso, not a Blue Jay. He's one of those names that we had talked about. My co-host, Jesse Tiricio, loved Pete Alonso, really wanted him to be here in Toronto. Unfortunately, he is not. He, of course, re-signed with the Mets. He was always going to re-sign with the Mets, just like Roky Sasaki was always going to be a Dodger. But what does this mean now for the Toronto Blue Jays? Because if you look at the available free agents there, it's Alex Bregman and, like, not much else in terms of impact. You don't have to go very far until you get to, like, Yasmani Grandal on the projected war list down there. Ross Atkins did say today that they expect they're mostly done in the free agent market, that the next big move is likely going to come from trades or waiver wire claims or anything like that to fill out the bottom half of this roster. But my simple question, Dave, is what do the Blue Jays do next, if anything? Or is this mostly the team that we're going to see going into the season this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to look at it and say anything other than that this is probably the group. Would it surprise me if we got Bregman? Not really. I'd be more surprised. I think I'd be more surprised maybe by the number than by the fact that he was willing to sign. Just because it's getting to a point now where, like, he is a name brand value. Like, it's not exactly the same situation as Alonso, where there was, you know, clearly a desire to still be in New York, as evidenced by the fact that he was offered better packages by other teams and including ours, and turned them down. So it was clearly from the start that this is, you know, he's like, I still believe in this team. I still want to be with this team. So that's fine. Bregman, on the other hand, I can't see Houston retaining him because they've essentially replaced him already. But he is still talented. I mean, the offense has taken, you know, a dip, but the defense is still going to be really, really good. Is he an upgrade at the hot corner compared to Vlad? Defense wise, yes. Is he an upgrade compared to someone who played a lot of third base last year, Ernie Clement? Probably. So
yeah, probably.
So it's a situation there where if they do add him, that's nice. Again, it doesn't move the needle a huge amount, but it is a nice defensive upgrade at third base, or, you know, potentially second. If you really want to play him there, he can do it. But I think by and large, Bregman or no, I think if they do sign him, that's the only other person that they're going to sign. I think largely what we see here is what's going to be the case. And they're just going to be, like you say, trying to aim for people in the trade market. Or if a bunch of guys take a big step forward, then maybe they say, okay, we don't have to worry too much about it, but we'll see where we're at the trade deadline a little farther on down the road.
Yeah, I don't think Alex Bregman is coming here. And frankly, I don't think I want him. There are some numbers that pitchers have just attacked him more, and that Alex Bregman has just not done damage nearly as much on the pitches in the zone. And I think he's, what, 32, and he wants a 6-year deal still. And it's there's signs of red flags already. And to have that guy for 6 years is no thank you, especially with their options.
Absolutely. I wouldn't even give him half that many years. Like, if I'm the Blue Jays, I'm signing him for like 2 years, maybe. And he might not, but again, he might not have a choice. I don't think anyone's I don't think anyone's going to be willing to sign him for 6 years. I don't know if anyone signs him for four. Right. Maybe he gets 3 with an opt out after year one.
There are rumors that he's got multiple 6-year offers on the table. Yeah, that's MLB Trade Rumors reported that too. And it's,
you know, I mean, I guess if it's a team that has a lot of room within the salary cap, like before you get to the luxury tax threshold, where you can afford to eat this back half of that contract, then I guess I could see it from that perspective. But for a team that's as willing to spend as the Blue Jays have seemed like they are, I don't think it would make any sense for the cap situation that we're in to give him any more than 2 years. So if he's not willing to take that, then I agree that he wouldn't be here.
Yeah, I agree. Go to Detroit. Play with AJ Hinch. That'll be your home, Alex Bregman. All right. I do think we will sign somebody like a low-end DH type. I've mentioned JD Martinez before. I thought Josh Bell would have been a good fit here before he signed. And I dare say it, like, we might honestly bring into a minor league deal like Joey Gallo or Daniel Vogelbach, a guy that they hope they can just, I hate to say it, Danny Burgers is going to cause some people to rip their hair out. But I think that is the type of player the Blue Jays might look to add. Especially one that can hit right-handed.
Man, that's
coming into that bench.
That's going to be so tough too. If we get Vogelbach again, like if we get him back again, because I root for that guy so hard. I just love guys like that where they're good at one very specific thing, but they do it reasonably well. And it's just unfortunate. It just didn't really work out for him when he was here. He just didn't get the right amount of playing time, and the numbers weren't great when he did play. So that's it. I think I like him for the same reason I like Kirk, where it's like a guy that you look at him and you say he's not like all the other guys out there that are elite talents, but he's in the league. He made it to the show. So I'm like, I'm rooting for you, man. So,
right. I'm with you on that, Dave. We will see. Obviously, we'll talk about that when that happens. Obviously, some bullpen arms are likely going to roll its way into the system as well. All right, Dave, let's get into the main topic of this episode here, because everyone watching, we're here to talk pitching. We should probably talk some pitching, right?
Probably.
It seems like the smart thing to do on this episode. And you don't need me or anyone listening here to tell you why pitching is important for having a successful baseball team. The old adage is pitching and defense wins championships. Well, the Blue Jays have the defense part covered. It's sneakily going to come down to the pitching. And last season in Major League Baseball, Dave, every single postseason team finished in the top half in baseball in ERA. The Blue Jays pitchers last year had a 4.29 ERA. It was 22nd in baseball. So if the Blue Jays want to get up there, they need to be better. And if you look at some of the other numbers too, Dave, like last year, the 8.1 WAR was third worst in baseball. We were 23rd in strikeout rate, 19th in walk rates. Only the Colorado Rockies pitchers allowed more hard contact than the Toronto Blue Jays did last season. All of that thing is going to need to improve for this Toronto Blue Jays team to get to the promised land this year. So, Dave, general, don't get into too anything deep yet, because we are going to get in deep. But do you feel like the Blue Jays pitching rotation as a whole is going to be leaps and bounds better this season?
Compared to like last year?
Compared to last year, correct.
Okay. I don't think so. Like, I don't think, I think it would be inappropriate to say that they're going to be leaps and bounds better than last year. I think it has an excellent chance of being better than last year. If we can get more of a situation like we had 2 years ago, where most of the guys are mostly healthy for most of the year, and you get a little bit of a return to form from Scherzer and from Bassett and Gausman, like you said at the beginning, finds his strikeout stuff again. I think the rotation does have a real chance of making a good comeback. Like, I think you could absolutely see a scenario where most of the staff is hovering around like a 3.5, 3.7 ERA. You know what I mean? Very, not elite, but very respectable enough to keep you in most games. But again, there's a lot of question marks there, because, you know, these, apart from Bowden Francis, all these guys are, you know, well on the other side of 30 for the most part. Mm-hmm. And so you worry about, you know, arms starting to break down, because we have been very lucky, all things considered, from a health perspective for most of these guys. So,
yes. And that was one of my overarching questions I was going to ask about this rotation. It is an old rotation, and a lot of these guys have thrown a lot of innings, right?
Yeah.
Bassett, Gausman, Berríos have all thrown a ton. Max Scherzer has thrown like a million innings since he made his debut in 2008. Like, there is a lot of wear and tear, and you could argue, like, I wrote an article for jcenter.com about Kevin Gausman the other day, thinking that it might not have been best for him to throw as many innings as he did last year, because there is some wear and tear and there is some issues with that. And we can dive into that. But if you're a betting man here, Dave, like, betting that a pitcher, especially in his, as we get to his mid-30s here, to just randomly get better, the odds will tell you, the statistics tell you, they will get worse. So it's not a promising look up front for the Toronto Blue Jays. And last season, too, things went bad. They did they could have gone worse, to be honest, but Alek Manoah only made 5 starts for the Blue Jays. Yusei Kikuchi had some good, some not so good. He was traded midseason. Gausman showed flashes, but overall a decline in the stuff was there. Chris Bassett took a very big step back that I don't think we talked about enough that we will talk about later on in this episode from him. And don't even get me started on the bullpen. So that's going to need to be better here as well. So it'll be very interesting to see. And if the Blue Jays have dreams of getting to this thing, then these pitchers, particularly these guys, are going to need to be better. And that's where I think that will make or break this year's Toronto Blue Jays team.
Yep. No, I don't disagree with you there. Absolutely. There's the guys that we have, the potential is absolutely there because a lot of them, you have seen the potential, you know what the known quantity is, but there's a lot of question marks from health perspective. And there's a lot of question from guys bouncing back or you'd hope that they would. Right. So
Let's get into these guys a little bit then here now, and let's start talking more about these individual pitchers and what we should expect from these guys going into the season. And Dave, I want to start with Kevin Gausman. Last season, 181 innings, 3.83 ERA, made his 31 starts, but there were some notable signs of decline in the pitching repertoire here. The splitter lost some movement. The four-seam fastball lost some velocity. He started adding a two-seamer and a slider more late into the season and did have some moderate success with that. He's kind of become a more pitch-to-contact guy as he gets later into his pitching career. He's now into his age 37 season. He's got a lot of innings, or age 34 season, not 37, and got a lot of innings under that belt here, Dave. But I've got my thoughts here, but I want to hear your thoughts first. How do you think Kevin Gausman is going to do this season?
I'd like to believe that it'll be an improvement over last year. I think if you look at his career trajectory, there are a lot of bumps in the road. It took a lot of struggle to get Kevin Gausman to where he is now. A lot of figuring stuff out on the fly, a lot of, you know, essentially going back into the lab and trying to figure it all out again. So I believe that Kevin Gausman has the ability to take the data from last year and say, okay, this is what was working. This wasn't working, or I need to be better at this, or I need to be a different approach on this. And I think he will be better. I don't know how much better, but I do think it'll be an improvement over last year.
Okay, so here's where I stand on Kevin Gausman. And I think if you were to ask the consensus of people out there, whether it's fantasy people who are like know to study these players, or if you ask a lot of Blue Jays people out there, they would think that, hey, maybe Kevin Gausman is just over the hill. I'm going to come up with a counterpoint of why I think Kevin Gausman is better this year and will, in fact, be much better, even if the fastball velocity is down and even if he doesn't get those strikeouts on the splitter again. Yes, with the full caveat, if those things come back, it would be even better. Fantastic. We're not even looking at it. But I want to dive in a little bit to his season he had last year. And there are some very weird splits that Kevin Gausman had. Like, for example, his ERA at home last season, over 5.02. His ERA on the road, 2.51. Okay. And then in the first half of last season, remember, Kevin Gausman had that shoulder issue early on in the year, 4.52 ERA compared to a 2.92 ERA in the second half. Mm-hmm. I had made the comment a few times, like Gausman actually started to finally look healthy later in the season. And if that is the guy that we get going forward, that I will say still showed flashes of dominance. He had a complete game shutout in there against Oakland. I feel like he had another start where he was absolutely dominant in there too. Like, if you can still show those flashes, I still believe you still have it in you to be that dominant pitcher. And I know full season statistics are more predictive than half season statistics, but I do want to say that I do think Kevin Gausman might actually be closer to that mid threes ERA than the guy that looks like all of his stuff is declining, that's on the wrong side of 30, that looks like he's just hit a wall. I still think there's more in there for Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Like I said before, he has shown the ability to retool himself and to bounce back from difficult circumstances. So I think if anyone on the roster is poised to do that, it's probably him. And if we get to the end of the season and his ERA is, you know, 3.5, 3.6, well, I would not be surprised at all.
Right. And And then the defense behind him too, if he is a more pitch to contact guy, which he showed in the second half of last season, I think is only going to do him wonders as well. The only problem is sometimes, you know, he does get hit hard at times. Like even when Kevin Gausman was getting Cy Young votes and was an all-star, he was still getting hit hard quite frequently, but I think that can change. And then if that splitter comes back, we are laughing at what Kevin Gausman could be. And I still think he is probably our best chance at being our number one pitcher going forward into the season. Projections for Kevin Gausman. They have him right about a 3.67 ERA.
Okay. Yep.
3.67 ERA. You going over or under that number for this season?
Honestly, that might be absolutely bang on. I know I don't normally agree with the projections that much, but I think it'll be slightly under. I do think it'll be slightly under, not by a lot, but I think it'll be more like 3.5 as opposed to 3.6.
Yeah, so Kevin had a 3.83 ERA last year. He hadn't had an ERA higher than that since, well, pre-COVID. It was in his COVID in 2019 with the Reds. He had a 4.03 ERA, and that was before Kevin Gausman became a different pitcher. So we will see about that one. Next guy on the list, Dave, Jose Berríos. Last season, 3.60 ERA over 192 and a third innings pitch. And if you remember, Dave, we had some gripes on Jose Berríos in the preseason. He wasn't that good out of spring, and we thought we were getting worried. Well, it didn't matter. He was dominant to start the year. He was pitcher of the month in all of baseball in the month of April, you may remember. And then his first start in May, he gave up 8 earned runs to the Phillies, and then he struggled. But then, from August 7th to September 20th, he didn't allow more than 2 earned runs in a single start until that finale against the Marlins when he was trying to get his 100th career win and couldn't get there. It's wild. For as inconsistent of a season it might look for Jose Berríos, his career numbers always, always, always seem to fall into that line, except for that 1 year he had in Toronto, which was a little blip. So I think we're expecting much of the same. But I want to hear your thoughts on Jose Berríos.
Yeah, I mean, he's La Máquina for a reason. He's very, very consistent. He's always been very consistent with the Twins, with the Jays. Like you say, apart from that one kind of blip in the radar, he's a machine. He, as long as the, you know, touch wood, that the injury luck holds up, I think he has absolutely every chance to be almost exactly the same kind of pitcher. I, like you say, it was very up and down for him last year. So I'd love to see him smooth it out a little bit and be a little bit more consistent start to start. But apart from that, yeah, I mean, he's the number one guy on the rotation for a reason.
Yes. I do note though, like there were some things here, like the swinging strike rate went down a little bit. These strikeouts went down. Walks were about the same. Home runs were about the same. But he actually induced less hard contact, and he did strand a lot more runners. But the ground ball rate for Jose Berríos was the highest it's ever been in his career. And for a sinker slider pitcher, the fact that you're able to get more ground balls can only be a good thing, especially with the defense these Blue Jays are going to put behind him. I think it's going to be more of the same. I can't see like a big leap forward for Jose Berríos, especially now he'll be going into his age 31 season. But I don't see much in terms of like the decline is here. He's going to fall off a cliff, still under contract for a few more years. But you never know. These things can happen. They can happen suddenly. But there's not much in the data whatsoever that screams to me, okay, Jose Berríos is falling off a cliff here.
No, I agree. Like I say, you know, it was a down middle of the year for him, but he bounced back very effectively towards the end of the year. And consistency wise, he's always been kind of like a metronome as far as that's concerned. So, I don't think there's any reason to be concerned about his performance. I think we're going to get pretty close to exactly what we'd expect from him, barring any you know, injury, touch wood.
Yes, and that's the caveat with every pitcher we're going to talk about here in this episode, is injury included. And you might remember, Dave, like the Blue Jays went 21-11 in games Jose Berríos started last year for a team that finished below 500. So
that's very impressive.
You know, 16 wins. I mean, I know we don't love pitcher wins because they're not that predictive or anything, but you got to give him credit. Jose Berríos is on the mound. You win 2/3 of your games. I know that's not likely to repeat, but that is still very, very impressive for Jose Berríos. Dave, the projections on him have him at a 3.91 ERA. Where are we going, higher or lower?
I think lower, honestly. I think that's a little high.
Okay. It's going to depend to me, I think, on how much of those ground balls get through. If he's got a low BABIP, then I think the ERA is going to follow. If, you know, those solo home runs turn into two-run home runs, or if the walk rate strikes up a little bit, then I think we're going to be in trouble. But no matter what happens, I think he's going to be right in between a 3.5 ERA and a 4.2 ERA, and I don't think it's going to be much any difference in there. A good, consistent, stable rock guy is going to give you a chance to win every single game, and I think that's all you can ask for out of Jose.
Absolutely. Teams. Absolutely.
All right. Let's move on to Max Scherzer, Dave. And this is the fun one. This is the new guy that we are getting in here. Last episode, we talked about the Max Scherzer signing. We went deep kind of what to expect from Max Scherzer. The quick summary here, though, is he only played in 9 games last year. He could be at his age 41, where his body just can't keep up to it anymore. But there were a lot of quotes from him. In fact, even more quotes came out today from Max Scherzer, who said he feels very healthy going into a regular season. He feels good. Everything seems normal. He should be okay to give the Blue Jays a chance. The strikeout numbers rates went down, and there was another number. Oh, the velocity on his fastball went down a little too, but his chase rate was still very good. His swinging strike rate was still very good. The average exit velocity against him was right in line with his career averages. So there were some things in the profile that says Max Scherzer could still be somewhat effective. And I, you know, we're not getting the guy who's striking out 20 a game. Nobody thinks that. But the fact that he can come in, he can get your 5 innings where he gives up 1-2 runs maybe and keep you in the games. Plus, he'll be fun as hell to watch on the mound too. Is going to be this year. But that's what we said on our last episode. But Dave, I want to hear your perspective. What do you feel like we're going to get from Max Scherzer this year?
Yeah, it'll be enjoyable, I think, as long as he is kind of, you know, in line with expectations. There's very few men in that play baseball that are more intense than he is. And you love to see that on the mound. I think that's what a lot of people really, not just because he was pitching extremely well, but like Alec Manoa's rookie year, he had that like FU
energy. That attitude.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Max has that in spades and always has. And so it'll be fun to see from that perspective. Obviously I'm a little concerned given that the last couple of years, not just last year, the last couple of years have been a little rockier than I would have expected from Scherzer. But like you say, it's age 41 season. It's hard to really know exactly what we're going to get out of him. But if he says that he's feeling healthy and that he's, you know, going to ideally perform, you know, as well as he can do. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a 20 strikeout guy either, but like you say, if he can give you 5 2/3 and strike out 8 guys, I think that's a win. And I think it's going to be, if he can give you that, you know, most days out, you know, maybe even three runs given up, I think that's a big win. I think that's going to be a very, if that's the case, that's going to be a bargain contract.
Imagine too being in the opponent's batter's box and you get the attitude guy like Chris Bassett coming in there, and then you get Max Scherzer, who, by the way, is a grunter when he pitches. We haven't had that since Robbie Ray was here. Gonna be intimidating as hell. I almost feel bad for John Schneider, who's gonna have to come out here sometimes and try to pull Max Scherzer from some of these games. That's not gonna be fun. And John can be kind of a fiery guy in his own right. It's going to be good. Look, we don't need Max Scherzer to change the world. We just need Max Scherzer to keep us in the games here. I want to almost limit his innings as much as possible. Like, I don't want him throwing that much this spring. Almost want to put him as like the 5 starter in the rotation so you can space it out a little bit more, because we basically just need him to stay healthy until Alec Manoa is ready, which probably late July, let's say August, just to be safe. But if Max Scherzer can keep us afloat until then, I think we're happy. I do want to note, though, out of all the starting pitchers we're going to talk about here, there is just massive fall-off potential. Max Scherzer could get lit up. It could be bad. He could be throwing 89. We'll know pretty early. And it could be just garbage. And even though we don't think that's going to happen, the Blue Jays do need to account that is a possibility with Max Scherzer.
100%. Yeah, no, that's why it's such a big question mark, is because you know what the resume says. But at the end of the day, I mean, once it starts to fall apart on you, it doesn't ever usually get better. The one parallel that I like to use in case like this is Dave Steeb. Like, yes, absolutely phenomenally dominant pitcher for a complete decade. Inarguably, in my opinion, the best pitcher in the 80s. And he was out of the league by 93 because his arm just fell apart. They absolutely overloaded him with innings, and he was such a fiery competitor that he didn't want to come out, same way that Max is. And, you know, his last fully healthy season was when they won, right before they won the World Series, frankly, because he was out for the entire playoffs when they actually won it. So you hope that that's not the case here with Max, but you have to acknowledge that the possibility that this does kind of never get better is there.
Yeah, if that is happening and the downside is coming together, I think John Schneider needs to have a quick leash on him. You can't let him be throwing games from you, especially because the Blue Jays are probably already going to be from behind some of these other teams that these wins are so important. You can't just lose games if, and it doesn't even have to be Scherzer, if like Chris Bassett doesn't have it, or if Gausman's getting hit around a lot. Like, you have to be able to take away from these guys, and you can't go down with leaving them in too long. And I am so worried that the Blue Jays are going to do that this year, because they've done it in the past. But we will see there. Dave, 3.71 ERA and only 97 innings pitched. So I want you to give me an over under on both the ERA and the inning pitch total for Max Scherzer this year.
I think they're both going to be over, truthfully. I think his ERA ultimately is going to be hovering closer to 4, but I do think that we will probably get more like 120 innings out of him as opposed to 90. So
I'd sign up for that. That sounds good. See. I'd take that.
Yeah. Like I say, if it's 5 to 5 2/3 every time out, and it's, you know, 2 or 3 earned runs, I think that's something that we can all live with.
I'm almost thinking maybe what like Yariel Rodriguez did last year, where some starts he was only going 3 innings, 3 1/3. But, you know, you saw the strikeouts there. Some of them were kind of rocky, but you did see flashes of goodness there. And we'll talk about Yariel later, but I think that is something we could look forward. I'm with you on that. All right, Dave, let's talk Chris Bassett. And his 2024 season was inconsistent. He ended up with a 4.16 ERA, which was his worst ERA he has had since a 28-inning pitch sample size he had in Oakland with in 2016. That just goes to show how consistent Chris Bassett had been previously to last year. But last season, he allowed more hits, allowed more walks. He hit more batters. In fact, he hit the most batters out of anyone in Major League Baseball last year. And for a guy who was known for inducing soft contact 2 years ago, he was in the top 5% of all of baseball. He was closer to the middle of pack in last year. In fact, I've noted a handful of times this year last season that Chris Bassett only had 2 starts all year where he did not walk a batter. And both of those starts were against the Chicago White Sox, so they don't count. Every single start he had, he at least induced a few walks, which is not good for a guy who doesn't get a ton of strikeouts. And for a guy who relies on mixing up the pitches, if they're laying off those pitches and they're not fooling them, it's been a little bit of trouble last year. And remember, too, you can't mention Chris Bassett without mentioning last season. Remember how he had that little bit of a bout where he kind of went after the front office? It was in regards to the Shohei Ohtani pursuit and how they're building the team and whatnot. There was very clear frustration with Chris Bassett there as well, which overall led to an uninspiring season from Bassett last year. What are your thoughts here on Chris Bassett? Do you think he gets back to that guy who's been more consistent, or do you think it could be going the other way?
That's a really tough one, because I think we can all agree that it didn't seem to have anything to do with injury concern. It's possible that there was some nagging issue there that he was, you know, these guys are huge competitors, right? Especially guys like Bassett. They're going to try and fight through it if they can fight through it. The younger guys, you know, they're a little bit more conscious of it now, but these veteran guys, it's like, no, it's my turn to go out there. I need to, you know, go out there. And it's a little bit like a kind of a Jack Morris attitude, where it's like, I don't care if I'm giving up 6 or 7 runs because I have to pitch 7 innings, sort of thing.
Right.
And I it's tough when it's in that spot, because I feel like that is very much like his attitude. It was like, when he goes out on the mound, he's like, I'm expecting to pitch 7 innings. And when he can't seem to put that together, it does seem to impact. Like, it's kind of a progressive thing that kind of tumbles forward. I think that was kind of part of the problem was last year, is that he just couldn't string good starts together. He'd have a promising looking start, and then the very next start, he'd get absolutely blown up. And for a guy like that, I think his I think the key for him to have a good season is to get a few good starts under his belt right off the bat and just kind of roll with it there, and then have it be like the odd bad start is the bump in the road and not the one good start is the bump in the road.
The problem is Chris Bassitt has never been a good starter. Every year he's had with the Blue Jays, he's been a slow starter. And that was the case last year. In his opening start, he gave up 5 runs to the Rays. His next start at Houston, he gave up 4 runs. And then he had a 7 earned run game in there against the Dodgers to end the month. Like, Chris Bassitt hasn't been that. And when you mentioned it earlier, when Chris Bassitt has these bad starts, they do kind of seem to snowball. They get away from him. They get away from him very quickly. It's a walk, a hit batter, an infield single, and then all of a sudden a grand slam, and it's 4 earned runs against him. His last season with the Mets before he became a Blue Jay, I think he only had 3 starts where he allowed 4 or more earned runs. And then his first year with the Blue Jays, I don't have the exact number for forgive me, but I know it was up there of like 4, and then it got upwards of like 6. Last year, I can pull it up right now. He had 2 starts where he gave up 7 runs, another 2 where he gave up 5, and then 5 where he gave up 4 earned runs in an appearance. Like, that's tough for Chris Bassitt. And so, like, that number keeps rising. So I think there's more higher earned runs against him too. Like, Dave, I think Chris Bassitt might be cooked. Like, I know it's hard to bet against the guy who can throw so many pitches, one adjustment, and he's right there again. Mm-hmm. But I think unless he can get that command back, because he hit too many guys, he walked too many guys, unless he can find that adjustment, I'm genuinely worried about Chris Bassitt. And, he's in a contract year. He's a free agent at the end of the season. If things go really bad, he might not be on the roster all season. And that might not be a popular take, but I don't think good things are coming from Chris Bassitt this year.
Yeah. I mean, again, this is unfortunately kind of an evergreen statement about most of the guys on the pitching staff, is the chance is there for it to go disastrously. And I would like to believe that he's going to put everything he's got into this, because he's going to, I don't know what his priorities are, but you have to imagine that a guy like him is going to try and be like a Max Scherzer path and pitch into his 40s if possible. So I think he's going to try and give it everything he's got this year so he can parlay it into maybe one more 3-year contract or something like that. It's really tough when you're a soft contact guy and you can't find the zone with it anymore. You can't get swings and misses anymore.
And you're not even getting that much soft contact anymore.
Precisely. I was going to say, it's when that starts to go away, it goes away really, really fast. And it's really tough to get it back.
Hunjin Ryu, when Hunjin Ryu lost his sparkling command, it went disastrous quickly. Mark Burley late in his career, he kind of lost it. It fell away quickly. I'm worried that more of the same is coming from Chris Bassitt. The saving grace, if anyone can teach him anything on how to get around it, I would say it's Max Scherzer. So having the two of them around each other could be a saving grace, but I'm genuinely worried about the season we're going to get here from Chris Bassitt. 416 ERA is the projection for him this season. Where are you going with that?
That's pretty plausible.
Yeah. I think it's going to be higher. Like, I think it's going to be higher.
Honestly, this one feels kind of like it's going to really depend on how many innings they let him have. Cause I know he wants to munch as much as possible. Cause he loves going out there and tossing as many innings as he can do, because he's that kind of old school mentality. But if they can keep his innings down, I think it'll be maybe slightly underneath that, like closer to 4. If they let him pitch a ton of innings, I think it'll be higher than that. So it really depends. And this is, of course, absent injuries, but this is like load management, essentially, where it's like, no, we aren't going to let you try and pitch 7 every single game. It's like, we're starting to see some signs at 5, so we'll give you 5, right? If they can manage his innings a little bit, I think there's a chance there that they can keep him right around 4, and that's at least serviceable.
Yeah, having a better bullpen too will go a long way to help Chris Bassitt 100% be better. Absolutely. So you don't have to stretch him out like third time through the order, fourth time through the order as much, which I think could overall give his numbers a little better at the end, but I'll admit I'm worried. Dave, my next one here, and that's Bowden Francis, and I have a simple question, Dave. Who is the real Bowden Francis?
I think second half Bowden Francis is the real Bowden Francis. I mean, I am optimistic about him, because it did really feel like it was a situation where they were just sending him out there to figure it out. And then he did, right? It's going to remain to be seen I wouldn't be shocked if it's a bit of a slump, a sophomore slump compared to the second half of last year. I don't think it'll be quite as bad as the first half of last year. But it wouldn't surprise me if his numbers regress a little bit from where they were in the second half of last year, just because that usually does happen. Like, you have to be a super dominant force in the pitching game to not take a step backwards in year two, because the league just catches up to you, right? So it's going to be a question of the hitters are adjusting to you. How do you adjust back to the hitters now? So if he can figure that out and stay one step ahead of guys, then I think he has every chance of having as good a season as he had in the back half last year. But again, it wouldn't honestly surprise me if it takes him some time and he struggles a little bit out the gate, because the hitters have caught up to him now that they have, you know, at least a serviceable amount of tape to watch on him.
I'm starting to think, too, that there might not be a more interesting pitcher in all of baseball than Bowden Francis, because all the sabermetrics people are thinking like, well, this guy throws 92. He doesn't get any swings and misses. He puts the pitches in the middle of the zones. Like, he should be getting crushed. You remember Taylor Ward, when we were no-hitting the Angels into the ninth inning, said, this guy doesn't even have good stuff. What the hell is going on here? Why can't we hit it? But I've made the comp before, and I'll make it again. Like, this is very much Marco Estrada, right? The projection systems never liked Marco Estrada. And then when he was here, he just kept shoving, putting together these dominant appearances of hitless innings and all this stuff. And we've seen that with Bowden Francis. And what gives me hope, Dave, that I really do think Bowden Francis might not only be top three in our rotation, could ultimately become an ace as he's entering, mind you, his age 29 season. He's not necessarily a young buck anymore.
No.
Not only was he so hitless and so dominant in the second half, he struggled out the gate last year. We sent him down. He made six starts in Buffalo. 0.93 ERA down there. And even last season when he was down there in Buffalo too, he had a 2.67 ERA in his time down there with the Bisons. Like, he has shown more than once now this ability to just go on a run and be purely unhittable in a way that's harder to measure, because he's not swinging, missing guys. He's just not walking guys and they're just not hitting it against him. He's going to give up the odd home run, as that happened frequently. But as we saw last year, they were solo home runs. Didn't really hurt this team. Like, I've always loved it, especially when a pitcher can go out and show these flashes of dominance. I think this is a showcase for a guy's true upside. And if you can just put that together for, say, 25 of his, or 20 even of his 32 starts he might make, then you are looking at a pitcher that could do phenomenal things for the Toronto Blue Jays. And I don't think projection systems are measuring into that. And I don't think people as a whole are really measuring into that. The only thing I can think of is that he is going to take a bit of an innings pitch jump this year. And he did kind of fade towards the end last year. The velocity went down a little bit. He was going deep, high stress innings too for Bowden Francis. So let's watch that storyline going in. But overall, I'm really struggling to see, unless walks show up out of nowhere, how Bowden Francis is not going to be another high-end elite pitcher in this league that nobody's talking about right now.
Yeah, absolutely. The potential's there. The potential is absolutely there. Like I say, it wouldn't surprise me if you still see sparkles of it throughout the season, but he takes a little bit of a step back. But if he gets it figured out quicker than I'm giving him credit for, the sky's the limit with this guy. And like I say, I didn't think much of him at the beginning of last season, but I've been very impressed with him ever since.
Shout out to Jesse Treso, who's not here right now, but he's always liked Bowden Francis. Even when he was getting shelled earlier last year, he
Bowden
went through
Francis
there.
And truther.
Bowden Francis truther. He's also a Charles McAdoo truther. So we will stay tuned for that if he becomes a player late into the season here. Other SP options, Dave, we don't need to go deep into this, but we know the Blue Jays are going to use more than five starting pitchers this year. So out of these guys, and we'll kind of run through these quick, but I have six names here, and these are probably number 6 through 10 on the starting pitching depth chart right now for the Toronto Blue Jays. The first one is Yariel Rodriguez. John Schneider said today he's going to be stretched out into camp because you never know, there might be an injury. You might have to slide in there. He can't be sent to the minors. Worth noting for Yariel Rodriguez, he's going to be on the big league roster all year. And then Alek Manoah, done until July, right? So we will see him in the second half. Alek Manoah himself said he wants to be part of like a big trade deadline acquisition that we hear from all these players recovering from Tommy John surgery. We will see. And then next on these lists, I would probably put Jake Bloss next, Adam Klopfenstein, who we just re-signed on a minor league deal. Eric Lauer, we brought in on a minor league deal, pitched for the Brewers for years. Mm-hmm. And then you start getting into our prospects, Adam Macko and Treya Savage, who was just drafted last year. Our pitching depth gets pretty weak pretty quickly, but pick a name on there, David, because we don't have a ton of time left, but a name that intrigues you or you think might have more of an impact this season than we might think.
It's a boring pick, but I kind of have to go with Yariel. I mean, we know we got a pretty good taste of what he is, and we've seen him when he's been struggling, but we've also seen him when he's pretty much at his best. And he gave us some really good innings last year. Sure, he struggled at times, but again, if he's getting consistent reps, whether that's long relief out of the bullpen or whether that's spot starting for someone who's injured in the lineup, I think he has the chance to be a guy who's really kind of a glue guy that holds the pitching together a little bit if it's struggling elsewhere. I do think that like a 3-6 inning sort of situation for him, whether that's, again, long relief or someone opens for him and he comes in after that, or whether he's starting from the very get-go. Whatever the case may be, I think he has a chance to be that kind of versatile swingman that is kind of a Swiss Army knife that kind of holds both the rotation and the bullpen together a little bit.
Yeah, Yariel is actually going to be a very important pitching piece for the Toronto Blue Jays this year. We can't forget that. I think he's going to start more often than he won't this season. I don't know, 13 to 16 starts, I think Yariel will probably end up with. And how his progression grows, because he is fairly cheap for the next 5 years, is important. And then he also has that chance he can become a closer too. So keep that in mind. Out of all the names here, though, I want to shout out Adam Klopfenstein, who has only made one start in the big leagues, but I do think he has shown some things. He can be a very good ground ball guy. The type of guy that I think the Blue Jays have historically liked, I think he might get 4 or 5 starts this year, could put up some interesting things. The one name I think is going to disappoint here is Jake Bloss, who the Blue Jays wanted so badly to get him up to the big leagues after acquiring him at the trade deadline last year, and he just struggled. Now, through a lot of innings, big innings jump for Jake Bloss last year. He jumped like 4 levels, so maybe it was a case where he just burned down. He's probably one of the better pitching prospects still in our system. So there is a chance he could come in, click, and be that dominant thing. But I want to see more of that come spring training before I'm ready to give Jake Bloss the reins.
Yeah, absolutely. He's too much of an unknown quantity for me at this point to have any kind of confident prediction about him. If we give him some run in spring training and it looks promising, then yeah, let's see what we've got in this guy. But I'm not going to shed any tears if he doesn't look great in spring training and he just spends most of the year in Buffalo.
Yeah, he'll be something to watch though for down in Buffalo. Prospects, just names you should know for Blue Jays pitching prospects. Ricky Tiedemann going through Tommy John surgery. He'll be back a little later in the year. Treya Savage, our first overall pick last year. I'm a big fan of Lazaro Estrada, who threw a no-hitter for, I believe, the Vancouver Canadians this year. Jerron Watts-Brown might be one of my favorite pitching prospects we have here. But Kendry Rojas, Cal Stevens, Fernando Perez, Landon Moraitis, all names you should know that you will see this spring and that we will get interested to in the season. Dave, did you have another pitching prospect or should we move on to the next one here?
No, I think you nailed it. It's tough to know what you've got with these guys, but there's a lot of promise there. There really is. So I'm eager to see them throwing some real innings come spring training here.
Okay. And before we shift over to the bullpen here, a couple just starting pitching questions. Dave, does the lack of no left-handed starter concern you at all? Because all 5 and even Yariel, all righties. Is this a problem?
A little bit, yeah. Maybe not as much as some people would put stock into it, just because, you know, it's a lot of name brand recognition. So you expect that they're going to be able to kind of overcome that. But I do think it is a bit of a disadvantage for the Jays not to have a guy like that, even a guy who is like a Yariel Rodriguez type, who is like, you know, 3 innings here, 5 innings there sort of thing. Because I think that change of pace and change of, you know, obviously other side of the mound, different arm slots, that's, you need as much of that as you can get in the game today, especially on a game by game basis. And the fact that we don't have it right this moment is a little concerning. I think that most of the guys that we have are have the potential to kind of work through that and have it not be as much of an issue. But it does mean that, you know, the traditional lefty power bats that are lurking out there on other teams aren't going to have too many matchup issues.
Yeah, Kyle Schwarber lit up Chris Bassett when he was here and others. I will say, Dave, just bring back Ryan Yarbrough. It makes so much sense. The Blue Jays need length. They need the guy from the left-hand side. Like, unless Ryan Yarbrough absolutely hated his time here or something, I feel like that type of player is absolutely perfect for the Toronto Blue Jays to get coming in here as we round up camp. And pitching depth, because the old adage, you can never have enough starting pitching.
Never.
Do you think we have enough starting pitching? Do you think this depth is good to roll into the season? Or do you think we're going to look back at the end of the season and regret that we haven't done more?
I wouldn't be upset if we had one or two more guys. Like, I don't think that we're in like a desperate hole as far as depth is concerned, because you do have Yariel, you do have, you know, hypothetically, there's another guy that we signed before camp starts.
And we likely will. Yep.
You have guys that have shown some flash at the AAA level. So worst case scenario, you can give them a couple of starts. So I don't think it's the end of the world. But given the age of the average age of this roster, this pitching staff, I am a little surprised that there isn't a little bit more waiting in the wings, so to speak, because the potential is here that, you know, I don't think it'll like it won't be like take two out of three of Gossman, Bassett, and Scherzer. If they both go down around the same time, suddenly it's looking, it's not looking 100% anymore. Because Yariel's now starting, and then you go, okay, who's next? Right. And it's not a super long list of candidates right now, unless you're just going to start leaning on guys in AAA and maybe one of them works out, you know? But I think for every one, you know, rookie year Alejandro Kirk, you're going to have, two first year Jake Blosses, you know what I mean? Where the likelihood of one of these guys being plucked out of AAA and it just working immediately is, you know, not as likely as them struggling. So I wouldn't be surprised, and I would kind of expect them to have at least one more guy, whether that's another spring training invite, whether that's an actual signing, whatever the case may be. It'd be really nice if we could have a guy behind Yariel at the very least until you have Manoa starting to rehab in the minors.
I'm with you, my guy. And Dave, I've got five rapid fire questions. Just give me an answer. No time to go deeper into these, but I just want you to list your 1 through 5. What's your order? 1 through 5 of the Blue Jays rotation.
I think you have to give one to Berríos. I think he's been that guy since he got here. I think you put Gossman at 2. And then this is where it gets kind of murky, because I'd like to put Francis at 3, but it feels weird to put Bassett. Like, Bassett feels fine to me at 4, but it does feel weird to put Scherzer at 5. I don't know if he's going to have a problem with that necessarily, but it does kind of feel like he's the kind of guy that would take it the wrong way. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's like, what do you mean? I'm the fifth best starter on this team. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
But I think 1, 2, and 4 is Berríos, Gossman, and Bassett, and then flip flop Francis and Scherzer at 3 and 5. I don't know if it, which one it's going to end up at, but I think Francis is at 3 and Scherzer's 5 or vice versa.
Yeah, I think I said earlier in the episode, I think I want Scherzer in that 5 spot just to manage his innings a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think I want Gossman as my number one. I think he's going to end the season as number one, but I bet you John Schneider is going to put Jose Berríos number one, probably starting opening day, just coming off the season he's had and the respect that he has given him. And I'm with you, Francis, ahead of Bassett, because frankly, I don't think Bassett is going to be that good this season. Next question, simple yes or no, Dave. Does any Blue Jay starting pitcher get Cy Young votes this season?
No.
I'm with you. I don't think so either. Will the Blue Jays starting pitcher throw a no-hitter this year?
Man, that would be so nice. How
we're due for one. We are so due for one too.
We're super overdue for one. I would love it, especially considering how agonizingly close Francis got last year. It's hard to say yes, but like part of me wants to say that it's yes, but I also know that, you know, the only guy that ever did it for us, it took him his whole career to do it. Steve threw it in the last start of the last healthy season that he had for us. So
call your shot. Call your shot right now. Who throws it? Who throws the no-hitter?
It's going to be something stupid, man. It's going to be like September and it's going to be Manoah randomly or something like that, where it's like no one's expecting it. It's totally out of left field. And he just comes in for one game and just absolutely just hammers it. So I'll go with the crazy prediction and say it's Manoah deep into September.
Jose Berríos is my actual pick. I think he just have one with the ground balls that keep coming, and then they, you know, he's very efficient. He can get through it. But I'm with you. I would love to see like late season Ricky Tiedemann just come up. The Jays will never let him go nine innings in a start. Like that'll never happen.
Never. But,
that would be very, very fun.
Even if he was part of a combo no hitter, that'd be very cool.
Mm-hmm. But I don't want to see it. I want to see the starter go all nine, start to finish.
We know John Schneider
will let you do it. So there is that going for us this season. And then my last starting pitching thing is, will the Blue Jays add another starting pitcher at the trade deadline this year?
It's a yes and no answer, because the answer is yes if they're in playoff contention, and the answer is no if they're not. In fact, it might be guys going the other direction. If it's another season where we end up at the All-Star break where we ended last year, it would not shock me if Bassett gets moved at the deadline because he's on the last year of his
Scherzer,
deal.
Scherzer
is on a one-year deal. I know that they're very high on Yariel Rodriguez and obviously on Bowden Francis, so those guys are staying, and Berríos has a few more years yet, so you're probably hanging on to him. But even Gausman, it wouldn't shock me if the team's in a rough spot at the trade deadline. It honestly wouldn't shock me if three out of those five guys are gone at that point.
Then you're trading everybody, though. You're trading Bo. You're trading Vlad. You're Ross Atkins is gone. You know, I are running the team at that point, and we got to
do a bunch of 1-year contracts and wait for Arjun Nimala or whatever the case may be. Yeah. Right.
All right, we don't really have time here to touch bullpen, Dave, but the Blue Jays bullpen was downright terrible last year. We will dive deeper into the bullpen in a later episode. But Dave, give me a guy or two out of this pen you think will surprise us with a good season, and then a guy or two you think might be worse than we think he could be going into the season.
I think looking at who we've got right now, I kind of like Nick Sandlin. And I don't.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I don't think I like Nick Sandlin. So
really, I can't really quantify what it is about him that I like. There's just a certain, I just have this weird feeling that he's going to be, because it, a lot of the times in recent years, it's been a guy that's been kind of unexpected that has come in and had a real impact on the bullpen, at least for a stretch. And I just have this weird feeling that guy is going to be Nick Sandlin, at least for part of the year. I'm absolutely willing to admit that I could be wrong on that, but that's who I think could have a big impact. The other direction, man, I was so high on Brendan Little when he got into the majors, and then it just, I don't know what happened, but I'm pretty low on Brendan Little, so I wouldn't shock me if that's,
Did walk a lot of guys, did Brandon Little last year, worth noting, is also the only lefty in the pen. Nick Sandlin added a splitter last year with Cleveland and had some good results, and the good sinker slider guy. But we had Zach from At the Corner talk Nick Sandlin, and he kind of seemed just glad he was gone, which didn't leave me in a good feeling from a guy who watched Sandlin every day. But bullpen performance is fickle here. We don't know. Two things. My two players I think are going to disappoint, and I'll be quick on them here. Chad Green and Eric Swanson, I think, are going to disappoint us based on what their expectations are. Chad Green overperformed a lot last year, got lit up towards the end. Now, that could be an overuse thing. Didn't throw a ton of innings while he was dealing with an injury, and he had a bit thrusted into the closer role. I get that. Eric Swanson was terrible before he went down, and then he came back, and his ERA was good. all of his expected stats, albeit better than they were at the start of the season, still looked pretty awful for Eric Swanson. Yeah. So I'm worried about that one. And just some other notes here. It's worth noting, Jimmy Garcia was quite bad when he went to Seattle. Only threw about 10 innings, battled injuries, but that's worth noting. Keep that in mind. Brandon Little had the highest ground ball rate in baseball if you lower the inning pitch qualification so that he qualifies. So keep that in mind. Tommy Nance, very good stuff plus numbers. That curveball is a very, very good pitch for him. So keep that in mind. Yeah. I think Ryan Burr is a big league pitcher. He might not start the season on there, but I think he's got to be in there frequently. And Richard Lovelady, who was brought in on a minor league deal. I want it to be noted, he has gone to Driveline, added velocity, a name to know. Watch for him this spring. And Eric Pardino, who is in the farm system, he came back. He has thrown flashes of dominance and being unhittable, still just 24 years old. So those are just some names I think you should know out of the bullpen. We will dive deeper into those in a later episode. But Dave, a thought on any of those? Or do you have another pick deep in the system here that could surprise us in the pen?
No, I was going to say a lot of the guys that I was kind of digging through myself was the guys that you mentioned. Lovelady, such an interesting question mark for me. I really don't know what to make of him, but the like you say, the driveline stuff is very promising. So, and Pardino, I like Pardino a lot. Love to see what he's got at the big league level at some point in time. There's a lot of promising guys that we have, in the lower minors here. So who knows? Anybody could surprise this year as far as that's concerned.
Yep. And Zach Pop still on the 40-man roster. Nick Robertson still on the 40-man roster. Josh Walker, who we got earlier this offseason, and Easton Lucas still on the 40-man roster. Mm-hmm. So guys that are going to be in that mix as well. The Blue Jays will have guys. So we just got to find one that's going to be able to click. And I think we will. Dave, we did it. That's pitching. We went a little longer than I thought, but I think we covered almost everything, particularly in the rotation. And how are you feeling after this now? At the beginning of the episode, we said kind of, we don't know if the Blue Jays rotation quite get there. There's still a lot that needs to go right in this rotation.
Yeah.
But do you think we can do it?
The potential's there. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. If they can just, go out there and, like I say, if the team ERA for the starters is somewhere between 3.5 and 4, that's a huge win. And that's going to mean that they're in most games rather than not, which was the problem last year. The games got away from them really fast. So if you can get 5 2/3 of decent ball out of everybody on average, we're going to have a chance to win every night.
All right. And that's all you can ask for, is having a chance to win every night. And I hope to see more of that going forward. Thank you, everybody, for watching and for listening. Thank you to Dave for joining us once again on the show. We will have you back again more, I'm sure. Please make sure to like the video, subscribe to the channel, all that good stuff. Keep those alarm bells on, because I don't want to spoil anything yet, but we have some very special guests joining us on next week's episode. You do not want to miss that one. It is going to be a good one, guaranteed. So stay tuned to that. You're not going to want to miss that. For David Fulton, for Jesse Tricio, who couldn't be here today, I am Jesse Burrell. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll be back next week. And in the meantime, let's go Blue Jays.
Let's go Blue Jays.
There you go. Woo!